Parent Show, sponsored by Raydon Solicitors, award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raydonsolicitors.co.uk.
Tonight we're meeting up with Susie Moody, who is the strategic manager at Home Start Hertfordshire, the organisation that supports parents to be the best they can be and to improve children's outcomes. We met up with Susie last year to find out how the organisation was going online in the wake of the pending lockdown. Tonight we're talking to her about the organisation now that we're coming out of lockdown and coming offline. But first, we're talking about suicide and the tragic circumstances that can lead to the unnecessary loss of a child. The Parent Show met up with Debbie Roberts, the CEO of Ollie, the suicide prevention organisation, and also with Alice Hendy, who has developed a technology solution to try to identify potential suicidal behaviour. Let's join Seema Barker and Lydia El-Khoury.
Hello, and a very warm welcome. So tonight we're going to be discussing suicide, which I know it's an incredibly sensitive and painful topic for all our listeners. And my instinct as a parent, I don't know about you, is not to touch it, actually, because I'm a little bit afraid that even by discussing it, I'm going to put ideas in someone's head or normalize it or scare people. But I don't think this is a responsible strategy as a parent. And so tonight we're going to really dig into the subject from two excellent guests. We've got Debbie Roberts, who is the CEO of the Ollie Foundation, which, in case you don't know, is a local suicide prevention charity based here in St. Albans. And we'll also be talking to Alice Hendy, who is the founder of the Ripple Suicide Prevention Charity. So let's start off. Welcome to you both, and thanks a million for joining us on the show this evening.
Thanks, Lydia.
Hello.
So, Debbie, yes, my strategy of burying my head in the sand and trying to pretend this topic doesn't exist, what would you say to people like me and parents who are listening?
Well, I first of all, I completely understand that strategy. Suicide prevention feels like it could be a very complex thing. And actually, it is, because what's true in one scenario won't be true in another. What I might share as advice for one parent and one family might be completely contrary to what I'd say to someone else. Parents are not always guaranteed an accurate response from a child, first and foremost. That your child might not have the skill set to navigate that conversation with you, just as they might not have the skill set to talk about contraception or sex. They can talk about it with someone else, but not necessarily with mum or dad. Sometimes it might be because they simply just don't want you to worry, even though what you're both worrying about is true. And other times it might be they don't want to disappoint you. They couldn't bear to see that look on your face. So it's not always you that they're going to have the conversation with anyway. But I do want to say that in suicide prevention, most of the time the mantra is it's better to ask. It's better to have a clear conversation. However, really big note for everyone, because I said there are contradictions. We don't ask. We don't initiate that conversation when our child is drunk or high. We might not necessarily know that they are. We also wouldn't ask that question of anyone that might be going through a psychotic episode. So removing those three scenarios out of the equation, then in suicide prevention, most people advocate that it is always better to have a real and honest conversation. Because if we can't, how can we expect other people to do so? In terms of what we can do you know what? I just want to say we can start off early. We can do so much before there's a problem. Things like be really mindful and careful what it is we praise. Let's praise and highlight the things we have influence over. My 90-year-old aunt, when introducing or talking about anyone, will first reference their looks. Such a beautiful girl or boy. Oh, they're so lovely, so kind. Now, whether it's true or not, She's suggesting that how the person looks is the first notable thing about them. Now, on the most part, I think we've come a long way from that kind of thinking, but it's still worth checking our language. What are we inferring? For instance, another example, Manus, you've done so well, you did that without even trying. It may be intended as a compliment, but the inference is you didn't need to work at something to get the result. Now, for some kids, that message mutates like a virus and becomes a message that is only do things you find easy, and if it requires effort, don't try in case you fail. Which takes me on to my next tip. If we can learn to fail well, if we can learn support our kids to know how to fail well, look, nobody wants to fail at anything, but we all do. We all miss the mark on something sometimes. We need experience of how to do that with grace. What can we learn? What can we do differently next time? What were the hidden opportunities here? Because kids that learn that are going to be able to apply that later on with bigger problems where they feel quite lost. My third little tip, for certainly for starting off younger, but you can do this anytime, let your kid be sad. How many of you let your kid cry out to learn to go to sleep? It was probably harder on you than on them. It goes against our natural instinct to not go and soothe their crying, to fix things as soon as you can. But you did it for their benefit, and the same logic applies. Don't give them a sweet when they're hurt, because that teaches them to eat their emotions. Don't make them laugh by telling the table off when they tripped over running past the table, because that teaches them that they're not responsible for their emotions and their actions. And definitely don't tell them to be strong, to man up. There will always be exceptions, but I think most of the time you will do a much better service to your children to say, oh my gosh, that looks sore, or I bet that hurt. I'll sit with you while that eases. You're acknowledging their pain, you're not minimising it, and you're not fixing things, but you are saying, I'll stand by you.
Where do you stand on showing children, you know, when as adults are sad? Because that, I think, is not something that's necessarily instinctive.
Yes, and there's such good reasons for that. We want to model that kind of thing, don't we? But actually, it's not, as you suggested, it's not always useful. And that film, Inside Out, I reckon it should be on prescription. We certainly show it within our intervention and prevention training, because it is so important. That moment where we see that recognising the sadness allowed the character who was feeling sad to feel heard. And then he didn't need anyone else to fix anything. He felt heard. He was able to move forward. So I think with parents, showing that this is a difficult thing, I feel sad about this, or I feel really frustrated about this, or whatever the difficult emotion is, but then showing how we reconcile that. I think it's really interesting for people to consider our emotions. We have a huge range of them. We didn't evolve to have such a beautiful range of emotions if they didn't serve a purpose. And if we stop cherry picking the ones that we allow ourselves to feel and understand that they are part of that inbuilt survival system. It's our internal radar scanning the environment all the time for what feels good and what doesn't. And the things that don't feel good need our attention. And when we ignore that, we then lose the ability to fix that situation. It could be an external thing, or it could be internal. It could be the way we're processing the information. So I do think there's a place for being real with our kids and saying, Mummy's really sad today. That wasn't something I was expecting, or that surprised me, and it's going to take me a little while to sit here and come to terms with that. We need to see the whole arc of that story, though. We don't want to only see Mum being sad. We don't want to see Mum or Dad only being disappointed about things. We need to show the whole, and it gets better. The other thing that is close to that, so sorry, I was just going to say that I'm a mum. I have three kids, and one of the things that I chose not to do was pretend I was something I wasn't. Now, I was a hideous teenager. I won't go into the awfulness of it all, but suffice to say, when I say to them, there is nothing that you could do or say that I haven't done or said or thought, was actually a strategy that I used. One, it was true, but also I'm showing them, and it gets better, and you can learn from your mistakes. And yes, I did that, and I absolutely understand what you're going through. I know why that's so hard. When you set yourself up as this perfect person, that's really hard to live up to.
We've all had a rough year, one way or another, and mental health is so important, and we have to be so vigilant as parents, particularly with our children. So I'd love to know, what are you seeing in young people at the moment? You're on the front line as it is, and what are you seeing, and what would you recommend for us parents to do to keep an informed eye on their mental health and what's going on?
Can I answer it by taking a step back, first of all, just to say that one of the big misconceptions is that suicidal thinking is a mental illness. So I just want to start there by saying, at Ollie, certainly, we talk about suicide as a behaviour. It can be seen in those with mental illness, for sure, but it can also be seen in kids where there's no mental illness, but where they are emotionally overwhelmed, where they have used up the resources they have in the few years that they've been on the planet. They've been learning how to deal with life, and they've suddenly come up. Let's talk about the 14-year-old girl who first relationship, and as in love, and has been asked any number of times to share a naked selfie with her boyfriend. She has resisted every request, but on this day, he's told her he loves her, and for some reason, she feels like, yeah, I'm going to do it. And she goes into school to find that he shared that picture with all his friends, and all those friends shared that picture with everyone they knew. In that moment, did she develop a mental illness? What she was faced was a situation she didn't know how to handle. She had no resources. So what I'm seeing very often is people who, certainly with our young people, might not have the language to explain what they're going through or feeling or experiencing. They've only been on the planet however many years. They may not have felt that incredible deep love when we find our soulmate. They will definitely not have experienced that love that most parents experience when they hold their baby for the first time. So they don't have this sense of the magic that is to come. They also don't have the things that all of us have had, which is experiences of loss, of disappointment, of not getting the thing we worked so hard for. Somebody else got that promotion, someone else got that job. But we've all learned to navigate that. And you know, of course they haven't. They're only 11 or 14 or 17. Of course they don't have those skills yet. Now, if you've had a really lukewarm experience of school, lots of challenges within your friendship groups, and then a pandemic to navigate, you can see how some kids may have concluded that life's not all it's cracked up to be. And that's why those early prevention tips that I mentioned just before, like finding the magic, can be really helpful. What I would say is model and mirror, and you know, we just spoke about that a little bit, about being honest, about this feels awful. I would definitely not put a time on things. I've been saying this to people since the beginning of the pandemic. Let's not talk about weeks or months. Let's not, you know, in the autumn, I'm saying, let's not talk about Christmas or the new year as being a point in time when it will all be better, because you are setting yourself up to be very disappointed. We do need to talk about things getting better, and they will. But if we say it's going to be better by this date and it's not, that's when we know people start to fall to pieces. I would also say that, and this is one of the contradictions that's so hard to get your head around. So I've already shared, I've got three kids. I find it actually quite difficult to express how much I love them. They are the air I breathe. But that's my love. My love for them feels like it would anchor them in the world. But the truth of the matter is, although we think of a loving family, good friends, a good income, a lovely home as really strong protective factors, they are not always when it comes to suicide. And that can be really confusing to parents. And it's something that, you know, in suicide prevention training, you would explore more and think about more to understand that it's not about your love. In fact, for some of the parents I speak to, they will share that the child had said to them, I couldn't bear to disappoint you anymore. I didn't want to let you down. I felt like a burden. I felt like I was never enough. Of course, as a parent, you can't even get your head around how they could think that. But these are one of the contradictions.
Is there anything that we should avoid when we speak to our child? You know, if our child has talked to us about being, you know, really seriously considering suicide, what doesn't work? What does work? Any tips?
Okay, so what I would say is actually to give some tips could be as harmful as not, because every scenario would be different, for sure. And anything I said, there could be a family out there thinking, well, that would never work with my kid. But yeah. I think knowing that you don't have to fix it, and that possibly you can't, and being okay with that. And that's really hard for us, isn't it? You know, if my child would come home with a problem, I was already drafting a letter of complaint or sorting out how I could fix it. And in this situation, sometimes it's just sitting and listening and no judgment. And just like you referenced the inside out, being able to sit there and go, that sounds terrible. That sounds so hard. And I don't know what to say. I've not experienced this, but I'm not going anywhere. We will get through this together. Sometimes asking your child what works for them. Tell me how to be your mum right now. What do you need from me? You're not giving up your parental intuition or knowledge, but you are asking them, what can I do in this moment that would feel useful? Because you're not going to say this, but you're not 12 or 14 or 18 and living right now as a teenager. You don't have their experience of life. So they're obviously struggling, but they still have some expertise in who they are. So sometimes asking them. But then it's a fine dance, isn't it? Because sometimes we have to know when we say, OK, that is it. You know, we're not doing that. That can't happen. It is the most frustrating thing in the world, isn't it, to not have a guidebook or a manual. But I think possibly the most universally helpful thing is not to feel like you have all the answers and not to pretend you do, and to be honest about that and work it out together. I'm sorry, I haven't got a more sort of, you know, clear guidance on that, but I just think everyone's situation is so different because of what's led them to that point.
Absolutely, Debbie. And I think what you're saying makes a huge amount of sense. And I think parents would appreciate having those phrases in their, you know, in their toolkit.
You're listening to The Parent Show here on Radio Verulam on 92.6 FM. We'll take a short break, but we'll be back in just a moment when we'll be hearing from Alice Hendy as part of this discussion.
Now, I'm going to bring in our other guest tonight. And as I mentioned, it's Alice Hendy, and she's the founder of Ripple Suicide Prevention. Alice, welcome to The Parent Show this evening.
Thanks, Lydia, and thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. Now, I'd love you to tell our listeners a little bit about your story, and that'll explain why we really wanted you to come on the show this evening too.
Yeah, absolutely. So I come really from a bit of a different perspective to Debbie, after listening to all of her great tips and advice there. So I unfortunately lost my only sibling, my brother Josh, to suicide on the 25th of November. So it's still, you know, incredibly raw for me and my parents. We're still under 6 months that our worlds were completely turned upside down. And perhaps selfishly, but the way in which that I've been dealing with this is to set up a charity and to try to stop any other individuals, young people, old people, anybody from feeling how my brother felt, which was that there was no other alternative. And also to stop any other families and particularly any other sisters waking up and feeling how I feel every morning. So that really is the motivation. I'm doing this for Josh, and I'm hoping I can make a difference with my charity to get people the help that they need before it gets to this stage.
And Alice, I just want to say I'm so sorry for your loss. I know you've had a horrific not even six months. But what you're doing is so praiseworthy. And tell our listeners exactly what it is you're trying to do and if we can help.
Yeah, absolutely. So without going into too much detail, Josh was found locally to where I live in Hampshire. And where he was found, it actually became quite evident from a variety of different research and bits and pieces that have gone on since the passing of Josh and through his phone history that he had actually been researching and looking at really harmful material actually online before he did what he did. And my background is in IT and cybersecurity, so I have an interest in this field. But in the following days after Josh did what he did, I was, of course, looking for answers, and I wanted to try to understand why. What was he looking at? What was so bad that made him think that this was his only option? And in doing so, I discovered the kind of material that Josh was looking at online. And I wanted to have a look and say, you know, if I was to search for the same thing that Josh was searching for, what support comes up for me? What support is there for me to get the mental health support and help that I clearly need if I'm searching for these things? And the answer is, at the moment, a Samaritans helpline number. And Samaritans do some wonderful work. Fantastic. They save thousands of lives every year, and they're available 24 hours a day. But for me, that as a standalone option of a helpline is no longer enough. And actually, particularly for young people, it's no longer resonating. So with that in mind, I've created a piece of technology. I've called it Ripple, because the ripple effect every time that somebody takes their own life is just enormous. And this piece of technology is designed to intercept users who are searching for harmful content online and provide them with a message of hope that things will get better and encourage them to get the support that they need in a way that suits them. So not just through Samaritans, but also via the Shout text service, which is open 24/7, via the Calm web chat facility, via the Grassroots app that you can download on your phone. These are all ways, digital ways, that young people now feel, on the whole, more comfortable using.
That's you know, amazing, Alice, and I think that you're right to having identified that younger people do use media in just a different way. Would a young person need to download something for it to register with them if they were looking for something, or how does it actually work?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you know, the kind of concept of Ripple is very embryonic, so there's going to be a phased approach of rollout for Ripple. This is going to be a tool which is going to be presented to individuals who are experiencing crisis. And with that in mind, I'm really treading very carefully and taking my time to make sure that this is absolutely nailed on what we need it to be. So phase one, the launch date is going to be the 10th of September, which is World Suicide Prevention Day. And it is going to be what's called an add-on extension product. So all parents from the 10th of September will be able to install Ripple on any devices or machines, laptops that they have via any browser that they operate. That whatever it is you're using, you can install it very easily. I'll have all of the instructions available on my website for those who are unsure of how to download it. And once it has been downloaded, that would mean that if anybody then using that machine searches for something relating to self-harm or suicide, that Ripple would come up and be presented to that person. So that's the first phase. And I've got many other phases that I'm going to be implementing over the coming months and probably years. There's a long road ahead, but we're making good progress and we're leading up to the big formal launch day of the first phase on the 10th of September.
Just brilliant, Alice. Thank you so much for doing what you're doing. I mean, it's fantastic. Are you getting the kind of traction you'd hope to get?
Lydia, I've got more traction than I could ever have hoped I'd get with this. This was an idea and a disbelief, actually, that it didn't exist prior, that I had maybe 2 weeks after I lost Josh. And I said to them, look, you know, I can't believe that when you search for something like this, nothing comes up for younger people. Why isn't there a tech service being promoted? Why isn't there a web chat facility? Where are the options for people here who don't want to talk over the phone or can't talk over the phone? This is beyond my wildest dreams, really, with how much interest that this has received. From a media perspective, from a business perspective, from a charity perspective, from the education sector, everybody is almost wanting a piece of this at the moment. I, to be honest, I'm struggling to keep up with the day job and this as well.
Can I come in here? I just want to reinforce, it's so vitally important. For most people, most of the time, they don't want to die. It's that they don't know how to continue living with whatever they're feeling or experiencing. They've run out of their resources or capacity to manage their situation. To have something like this that allows us to signpost people to additional forms of help is just so important.
That's brilliant to hear your take on it too, Debbie. Thanks a million. And I'd love to know, what is your dream scenario? And if we're talking about suicide prevention.
My dream scenario is that I don't exist, is that Ripple does not exist, and is there's no need for it. You know, I don't want to be sat here having to do this. What I would like to see is people talking, people not stigmatizing this topic, people understanding that, as Debbie said earlier, every single person's journey is completely different and unique to them and their situation, and that they know exactly where they need to go and how they can go about getting the mental health support that they need in a way that suits them.
And I mean, it's exactly what I would have said. And in fact, I think when Alice and I first met, we both were struck by, it was the first thing we said to each other, we don't want to exist. We that's the dream, not to be needed. I'll take a clearer understanding, that an understanding that suicide is transient. You asked me before about what could parents know. One of the things that they could do for their children, and this is what I would love people to understand, and bear with me because it's going to sound a bit ridiculous, but for some people, suicidal ideation can be a bit like a terrible cold. It passes. And when you're in that cold, you might have a headache that means every step feels like your head is going to explode. But a few weeks later, although you can say to somebody that was a terrible cold, you can't quite describe the quality of the pain. And And we know that that is true for so many people. If we can keep them safe for now, whether it is that evening, that weekend, or those weeks, then we find that that thinking often passes. That's not to say that it doesn't revisit, but I would like people to understand the transient nature of it, and that it can be prevented. So that would be my dream.
Thank you, Debbie. And it's lovely and simple, and it's very encouraging as a parent to hear both of you speak about the potential to prevent suicide. And I think the more we hear you both speak on this topic, the better the world will be. So I hope we get lots and lots of listens to this show and to the podcast. And thank you both so much for the work you're doing.
Yeah, the very best of luck. And Debbie, you're always welcome to come back and tell us about your hideous teenage years if we didn't have enough time today.
Yeah, I'd like to listen to that podcast as well.
Yeah. Well, look, before I do that, let me just say to any parents that want to come along, this Saturday, 10 a.m. online, 90-minute suicide prevention training is available to you. It's always free. If you go onto the Ollie Foundation website, and you click on the training tab, you should be able to follow a few pointers to get to our online training calendar. And there you can click onto any of the training that you see. So our next suicide prevention training is called Talk Safe, Plan Safe. It's this Saturday at 10 a.m. The next one after that is the 10th of June, early evening. Very happy if somebody would like to make a donation for their space, because we rely totally on donations. Yes.
Excellent. Thank you both so much. Thank you, Alice. Thank you, Debbie. And keep up the fantastic work.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
That was Lydia El-Khoury and Seema Barker talking to Debbie Roberts, the CEO of Ollie, and Alice Hendy, the developer of Ripple. You're listening to The Parent Show here on Radio Verulam on 92.6 FM. We're going to take a short break, but when we come back, Lydia catches up with Susie Moody, the strategic manager, to find out what's been happening at Homestart Hearts.
We are delighted to have our guest, who's one of our regular partner organisations here in St Albans, and it's Susie Moody, who's strategic manager at Homestart Hertfordshire. How are you doing, Susie?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
It's a pleasure. So the last time we spoke, we were in lockdown number one. So it was quite a different set of circumstances, different world. I remember you moved so well online, all your activities. So let's catch up. How are things now? How are Homestart activities going? Are you beginning to think about opening up now with the vaccination rollout going so well and everything moving offline again?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. We did have to do a quick sort of transition into a virtual model of support for our families. And lockdown one was quite different to lockdown two, in that in lockdown two we had an exemption as a charity supporting vulnerable people to be able to do a little bit more, so we could continue running some of the family groups where we had the, you know, the ability to distance and have the ventilation and things, so that was a little bit better for us and for some of our families. And now, where are we now? Well, we have most of our family groups, we've got six across the county, we have most of them up and running again. Again, obviously with the measures that we need in place at the moment. And that's really lovely, because we've had some really isolated families who, you know, the group was the sort of highlight of their week and the one thing that kind of picked them up and then got them going for the rest of the week. So that's really been a concern for us, the isolation and the impact it was having, and children not having other children to play with, and socialising, which again is something that's come out in a quite concerning way. And the one-to-one home visiting support obviously was all virtual, which has been interesting. It's provided some opportunities for doing things a little bit different. It's meant we can reach more families, because the time spent sort of travelling to and from families' homes and things isn't needed at the moment, so it gives us a little bit more scope to support a few more families with that remote support. But we are now systematically sign of looking at our families, we need to go into their homes or have a do a risk assessment basically to make sure that if a volunteer mentor is going in, there's adequate ventilation and there's room to sort of distance. And with some families, they just don't have that room to distance, or ventilation is a bit tricky. So we've got to do that risk assessment. We can't put our volunteer mentors back into family homes without making sure they're safe and obviously the families are safe. So that's sort of a process that's going to take a little bit of time. But yes, we're definitely moving towards getting the one-to-one support back in, face-to-face support with families as soon as we can. So that feels really good. It's, you know, and I think a lot of our mentors have, you know, they've been doing a very different job, as have a lot of people. We've all had to sort of almost change the job role and what our day-to-day looks like to sort of meet the needs and do the tasks that now need doing. So I think for a lot of them, it will be nice. They'll really enjoy getting back out and having that face-to-face. And again, like all of us, just being out and seeing people and feeling a little bit more relaxed, hopefully. And because we're a charity and we support vulnerable families, all of our staff have been vaccinated, so that helps. And quite a few of the volunteers have now had the second vaccination. So that all helps as well, just sort of, you know, making people feel a little bit less anxious maybe about it and a bit more confident that we've minimised all the risks that we can.
And I mean, our listeners will certainly have heard of Homestart, and you're such a valued and really loved local charity. But in case anybody isn't clear, just remind us of the kind of core tasks that Homestart do. You've touched on a few things there, but just to remind people of the great work you do.
So we have an amazing team of volunteer mentors. And the charity is pretty much led by them in the sense that they deliver the main bulk of support. And our core work, as you say, is the one-to-one home visiting, where we match a mentor with the family, and they will look at what the needs of the family are and what the support can do for them and what it is they actually want support with. And that, obviously, emotional support is a massive part of every family that we support.
Now,
but also
more than
practical.
Ever.
So, well, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I think we could all do with a bit of it, to be honest.
Absolutely.
But yeah, and as an example, it might be sort of helping a family to sort of get themselves into a position where mum or dad feel able to sort of get the kids together and get themselves to a group, and the volunteer mentor can accompany them to that group. I mean, going into any group where you don't know anyone is scary, but if you've got issues around anxiety or you feel like you're failing at things, then it's even harder. And we've got a lot of children who have additional needs. So again, a practical example would be maybe a volunteer sort of helping a parent to go and just get some basics in a shop whilst managing the potential sort of meltdown or difficulties that they do, or that children with additional needs might exhibit, and they sort of can coach them through it, help them build some strategies for managing it and build their confidence as much as anything, so that they can just get out of the house and get some basics. Because some families, we've found that actually the volunteer mentor's gone in and they've got no food or no milk and no, because they just don't feel they can get out to the shop. So it's kind of little things that we take for granted but aren't that easy for some parents, and having that volunteer mentor just really sort of helps them work through those. And as I mentioned earlier, we have 6 family groups, so where families are referred into us, they can get involved in the group, and that's very much about socialising, development for the children in social and emotional interaction, and helping them to develop the skills they need for school, so that when they do get to the point of going to nursery, preschool or primary, that they're well equipped and they're kind of ready to start their education and in a really positive way.
And Susie, talk to us about that transition. So you're moving slowly to offline to real in-person. Does it involve PPE? Because that must be a barrier between the mentors and the families that they're visiting. Do they have to be heavily PPE'd, or is a mask enough?
A mask is sufficient as long as we've got the distance and the ventilation. I mean, there isn't any other sort of protective equipment that we would see that we needed. And where there are you know, difficulties in doing that, we also are doing some sort of walk and talk support, so the mentor can and the family can be outside, you know, with a much sort of safer environment in terms of it being very open and less sort of direct contact, if you like.
But that's
we've kind of covered the bases.
That's a great development. I mean, it's actually a great idea to take it outdoors and have fresh air and, you know, a little bit of side to side instead of opposite each other might sometimes work better. And tell us about fundraising.
So yeah, that got hit quite hard, obviously, when we went into lockdown, and we did lose about £35,000 worth of predicted income from events. Personally, it's been my biggest struggle not doing that kind of stuff because it's the fun bit of my job. But we are now getting back out there. We've done some really successful virtual events over the last year, which have been a massive learning curve. And actually, you know, we've sort of said, well, actually, some of those things we'll keep doing. So at the moment, we have a skydive organised for the 12th of June. So I think we've got five brave and dedicated jumpers so far. It is tandem, so it's not as scary.
Oh my goodness.
So we're still signing up people. It is, you know, it's not that far off. And obviously sort of raising the funds is a little bit trickier in the short distance, but we can work with that. And then in October, we've got, I think, two places left for a virtual marathon. So the London Marathon are doing a real live one, but also a virtual one. So we've got some places for virtual one, which, we've got two places left. That's in October. So obviously we're really keen to get another two on board.
So get those places filled. Well, St Albans is such a fit. There's so many runners in St Albans, so many kind of fit people. And certainly you can see that more and more with the second lockdown. But I'd say hopefully you'll have no problem filling those last two places.
We've also we've got a campaign we're just working on at the moment that I hope is going to be kind of quite fun and take the sting out of the holiday drama. But so what we're doing is it's called Where in the World, and what we're asking people to do is kind of choose a location that they would want to go on holiday but obviously can't, so it might be a bit of a sore point. But choose a place that you would like to go on holiday, work out, or we'll work out the kilometers it takes, and then as a family or as a team, as a business, do those, walk that number of kilometres, or cycle, or row, or swim that number of kilometres. When they get to the end, we'll send them a postcard of their destination, and we've got a few sort of, we've got a pack with some, you know, sort of some learning stuff for kids about the flags and traditions and cultures. So we hope that we'll get a lot of people involved in that, and that's going to be through from the beginning of July to the end of August. And even if people go away, they can still do that in terms of the walking or the cycling or whatever. So, yeah, we hope to sort of bring a bit of fun. And, it's good for us to be organising something like this too. So,
yeah, because I suppose the truth is none of us know completely. Hopefully we're going to be able to get away. But, you know, it all feels a little bit up in the air still.
Yeah, yeah.
That's I can't believe the skydive, even tandem, Susie. That's some serious commitment you're asking for people to jump out of a plane for Home Start Hertfordshire.
Yes, well, we kind of like to do a range of stuff, a little bit of something for everyone. I mean, I'm not into the pain of marathons and running, but much more about the adrenaline. And so there's, you know, something for everyone. And we tend to be a little bit out there and a little bit off the wall, so we've not lost that.
Yeah, so what was the most successful offline to online fundraiser you did last year? And I don't necessarily just mean in terms of funds, but in terms of impact.
I think probably it was a campaign we got involved with called the Christmas Big Give. So it was organised, it's happened for several years, and a company organised it. It's very complicated, but basically all the donations made within 1 week in December are match funded. So we had quite a long process of applying and securing some donors and that. But we came away with about £21,000, which was just mind-blowing. I mean, it was amazing. We didn't expect it. I mean, we put a lot of work in, and we had to warm everybody up for the 2 months beforehand. We had a lot of thanking to do afterwards. But we got some really big donors involved. So that's good because we've been able to build relationships with those larger donors. So we hope that going forwards, you know, we can get them a little bit involved in the charity so they can see what their donation's doing, and sort of come on board with us as, you know, sort of future supporters and donors. But I mean, the response we had from the community, I mean, through the whole of the pandemic, the support we've had from the community has just been phenomenal, and quite overwhelming, really, emotionally. I mean, we were putting out grants and bids and requests, and we did a crisis fund, and it was so nice and motivating to know that, you know, whilst we're battling with what we're battling with, it was making a difference for our families. And I mean, the community really, again, have kept us going. The support, the investment. We've had quite a few sort of small business who said, right, we're going to do a little promotion or something, and we'll give you 10% of what we've got, which, you know, for a small business, 10% of what they're making is, you know, it's significant. And people were losing jobs, but still we experienced that. So the Big Give campaign kind of harnessed that community spirit, and engaged some quite large donors, which is, you know, as a charity, they're really valuable, because there are times when we need that sort of bigger injection of money to, sort of, for certain things. But equally, all the donations are as valuable. So that was probably the most effective. And as I say, the target, well, we reached over our target. And I mean, when we started it and we set a target, I think we set the target of, I think it might have been 10,000 or 15. And we just, I remember sitting there saying, wow, this target's huge. We've never raised this amount in one event. Like, we've just got to do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we didn't do it on our own. We didn't do it on our own. We had everybody around us. So, yeah. So we'll be doing that next year.
Fantastic, Susie. So in the lead up to Christmas, got to watch out. But I would really recommend to all parents listening in to follow you on social media, because there's a lovely buzz around your activity on social media, and it's a great way to keep up with everything that you're going on. How can people find you?
I got a website, of course, which is www.home-start.org.uk. Or search Home Start Hertfordshire, it will come up there. Or, as you say, all of our media pages. We've got some really good resources as well on our website for all different sort of topics, some specifically relevant to now, but others general, sort of, you know, supporting children with disabilities or services for help with, you know, financial difficulties and things. So, yeah, as you say, our media is very well done by Nina, our media person. So it's definitely a good resource, and it's very accessible. And we are revamping it, actually. We've got a new one on the sidelines ready to come in as soon as we've just tweaked it. So that's quite exciting as well.
No, you're not giving too much away, Susie.
No, we like to make a big deal out of little things.
Good. Excellent. Excellent. But I mean, I have to say, I'm sure our listeners will be so delighted to hear that you've had the support from the community that you need,
yeah,
both kind of in terms of moral support and financial support. And it's great because the work you do is so important for our community. So, and it's amazing that you've just kept going. So now you're going to kind of come out the other end, and hopefully, I mean, will it be a mix of online, offline? I mean, will you keep some of the kind of COVID positives out of it, or do you hope by maybe, I suppose, by autumn to be back to normal? What's the plan?
I think that's everyone's question at the minute, isn't it? Yeah, we certainly will do, what's it being called, blended, hybrid. We'll do a model that will include some of the virtual things we've been doing, because it's massively valuable, and as I say, it increases our capacity. So there are quite a few opportunities to harness some of the things we've learned and developed, and, you know, certainly things like our training course that we do for the volunteer mentors, there's bits of that we can do online now. You know, it's easier for people not having to travel, or people who've got children, to be able to, you know, sort of jump on something for an hour in between school pickups or something, and not have to travel there and back. So we'll get a bigger reach, I think, of people who want to be involved and want to do the training. So, yeah, it's not going to go back to how it was in that sense, because we'll have additional support, and we're doing a lot of planning, sort of forward planning now. We've kind of got a COVID recovery plan that we're working on, and again from that, what we've experienced is that so one area that we really want to build on is around dads, because it's something that we don't do enough of, and we don't possibly cater for dads as much as we need to, because they're absolutely essential to, you know, children's welfare and learning and development. And what we found was there are a couple of dads who we were able to link up with during during the lockdowns, because they were at home and not working. And they had some real issues, and they were, a couple of them were new dads, and obviously for new parents during COVID it was particularly difficult, and support was very significantly reduced. So what we want to try and do is look at having that telephone support or that kind of online group to maintain that, certainly that relationship for those dads, but also to make it wider and broader and look at, well, what do we do, some things a little bit more out of hours or in a time that that is suitable, and we can do it because it's remote. So there's some areas of need that probably we haven't met as well as we could, that now we've got that ability to do a bit more and build that into something that's, you know, another part of what we do, another service that we can deliver and method of support we can provide.
Fantastic. So, Susie, great to talk to you. It's always great to touch base, hear what's going on with Home Start Hertfordshire. Thanks a million for joining us on the Parents Show, and we'll catch up with you shortly. I hope the skydive goes well. God help anybody who has to do that one.
Thank you, Lydia. It's
and stay in touch.
It's great to be
pleasure.
The opportunity to talk about what we're doing. It's brilliant. Thank you.
Pleasure, always. So that was Susie Moody, who is Strategic Manager for Home Start Hertfordshire.
And that's all we've got time for on the Parent Show this evening here on Radio Verulam on 92.6 FM. Our thanks to our guests this evening, to Debbie Roberts, to Alice Hendy and to Susie Moody. Our presenters this evening were Lydia El-Khoury and Seema Barker. I'm Steve Simpson.